A licensed therapist has written a book recently about a man in his 30s who murdered in cold blood his pregnant wife, his unborn son, his 4-year-old daughter, and his 2-year-old daughter, reportedly so he could start a new life with his mistress. When she found out what he had done, she wanted nothing to do with the monster. This is a true story out of Colorado, and the name of the book is My Daddy is a Hero, How Chris Watts Went from Family Man to Family Killer. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dean Lena Durhalli, who is the author of this book, and she's also a licensed therapist. Her website, by the way, is lenadurhalli.com. Durhalli is spelled D-E-R-H-A-L-L-Y. Lena, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jerry, for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Sure. Now, this is a very, very, very dark subject, and I read through most of the book and found it, you know, it's tough. It's because it's such a horrible story. What was it that attracted you to invest your time to put this book together?
That's a great question, and as you can imagine, I get asked that a lot, and it is an incredibly dark, tragic story. It was incredibly difficult to write. I actually can't read it, which is funny because I wrote it, but it was so hard to write that it's even harder for me to go back and read. So that's how dark the material is. But what compelled me to write it was, you know, I'm a relationship therapist. I see a lot of couples. I do a lot of marriage counseling and premarital counseling. And, you know, this couple, Chris and Shanann Watts, really did seem like the perfect couple. And, you know, by all accounts, they were. There wasn't anybody who thought that there was anything wrong. And even behind closed doors, there's a lot of evidence that there was. They had a happy, physically affectionate, loving marriage for the most part. And so, you know, I was really compelled to sort of understand, how does somebody with no warning signs of violence become violent? And then if we understand that, how do we sort of educate people to look out for signs so something like this doesn't happen to them, or so they don't cross a point of no return that you can't get back from? And so that was my main motivation.
And at the end of the day, you would label him as a narcissist, correct?
I would sort of say, and again, you know, I say that I can't officially diagnose anybody.
Right.
I'm always uncomfortable with that. But in terms of the what I figured out from reading the book and, you know, from my research and just observing things that he had said, I believe that he has a trace of sort of this hybrid psychopath narcissist. Yes.
Okay. Now, here's a quote from her, the wife that he killed later on. She said, "Today I celebrate you, Chris. You are absolutely the best thing that ever happened to me in 2010. That year, you were placed in my life when I was at my worst. I was just diagnosed with lupus and fibro, and I felt like my world was crumbling around me. Then I met you. We have so many incredible memories these past 8 years. Two beautiful girls, moved halfway around the world, sold house, built our home for our family, and all you constantly do for us. You work your boop off. You're an amazing husband and even better dad. You are the blessing I've been looking for my whole life." And she writes these words, and within a short period of time, he ends up murdering her.
Yeah, her and her unborn son and her little daughters. So, I mean, quite shocking.
And those were his daughters, too.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yep. And so, yeah, that's what was so shocking to everybody, and, you know, that I wrote this book, too, to try to help people understand how something like this could happen from a psychological standpoint, because what she was saying, he really was. He was this hands-on father. He was very submissive to his wife. You know, she sort of ruled the roost of the household, and everybody just said he's this sort of passive, easygoing, nice guy. Nothing ever fazes him. He's doting, he's loving, and so, I mean, that was accurate how she described him, and just a few months later, he murdered them all in cold blood. It's just shocking.
Now, later in your book, I'm jumping to page 209, you said this, or you write this, "In his mind, he blames Shanann," how do you pronounce it, Shannon? Shannon?
Shanann? She pronounced it Shanann.
Oh, Shanann.
Yeah,
it's like, because the last part of it is Anne, like the name Anne, Shanann.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In his mind, he blamed Shanann for all his problems. In his mind, it was Shanann's fault. He had grown distance from his family, and her fault, his children didn't have a close relationship with them. In his mind, it was Shanann's fault. He had cheated on her and put him in this mess. Everything was her fault. Chris's narcissism and entitlement had reached their peak. Your comments?
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote that, you know, because this was also based on things that he had said, is that all this sort of quiet rage that he had against his wife had been boiling to the surface, and there had been issues between him and his parents, and sort of towards the end in the weeks before he killed her, you know, he was having an affair, so he had a mistress in the 6 weeks prior to murdering his family, and I think that contrast of sort of idealizing the woman he was having the affair with, which, of course, you don't even know her. You've known her for, you know, 6 weeks at best. And then seeing all these sort of issues come up with his wife and his parents, and where he went with that was sort of to blame his wife in his mind for all those problems. And then the justification to him was that he could murder her to get what he wanted. And that's sort of where you really look at someone as having these psychopathic or narcissistic traits. And as you may remember from the book, I actually wanted to look at a lot of the neuroscience behind that. And so there's a lot of research out there that people who have psychopathic brains have this sort of gray matter abnormalities that represent, you know, a lack of emotional empathy and things like that. So we don't have an MRI of his brain, but it does seemed that he had these really extreme empathy deficits to view his wife and children as an obstacle to getting the life that he thought he deserved.
But while you say all this, I mean, the book makes it 100% clear this was his responsibility. He was, you know, he's the one who did these things. It's not like some sort of, you know, he has some sort of excuse or whatever for doing these things. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you something. Maybe this may seem off the wall. But I want to combine the story of your book with another book that was written many years ago. You may even be familiar with it. It was written maybe about 30 or 40 years ago. It was called A Fatal Vision, something like that. And
uh-huh.
It was about,
I know it. Yep.
Okay, it was about a man,
yep.
A doctor, a very uh-huh. accomplished doctor, and he also killed his wife and children and so forth. And both of them have the same, have something in common. And that is they were taking a lot of medicines and, you know, mega vitamins or something like that, but medicines for weight control, diet medicines, diet pills. Is it possible that there's a link there that, you know, the biochemistry in the brain got fouled up or something? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, you're not the first person to have put out that theory. There are people who follow the case. To my knowledge, the Thrive supplements, which is what Shanann was selling, she was a saleswoman, and she sold these supplements.
To help lose weight.
And also for general health. So for my knowledge, it's natural vitamins, and like if there's caffeine in it, it's from green tea extract and things like that.
Oh, that sounds harmless.
And so, you know, he had been using those for, I think, several years and things like that. But, you know, the argument people will make about that is that many people use those kind of things and don't go and kill their families. And so, you know, I think from my experience as a mental health counselor, for someone to have a true psychotic break, like to be, and I actually did work with a man who killed four people, including a child, and he got off on the insanity defense because he really, I used to work at Catholic charities. And so we would work with people who were mentally ill. And in some of those cases, they had committed some pretty serious crimes. And it is very hard to get the insanity defense, but he literally did have a psychotic episode with hallucinations and delusions. And it was a drug-induced episode.
Yeah.
And so I've seen those before, and I know what they look like. And that wasn't something Chris, he didn't exhibit any signs of that. And I think if he had and the defense thought for a second that they could have that as their case, they would have ran with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he later on, as you see in the book, he kind of goes, Chris, later on, after pleading guilty months later in jail, now he's, you know, on this redemptive path with Christ, as he says. And so he sort of alluded to the fact that maybe it was demonic possession. And so, again, that's up for the reader to decide whether or not they believe that to be true. I say in the book, I can't say for 100% what's in his heart. I'm not him. But to me, it's not a genuine conversion, but some other people may feel differently, and that's fine if they do.
Okay, here's a couple of quotes from your book, and I want you to, I'll just read these, and then you comment on this overall theme. He felt no remorse, only relief that he was finally free of his family. Chris Watts is an enigma to many. That is one reason why I felt so compelled to write about him, because he was a perpetrator that had displayed so few warning signs. There were zero red flags. Sometimes the most dangerous people are the ones we least expect. And in reference to pathological liars, you quote another researcher who said, some people are just really good at lying and there aren't going to be any signs. So there's kind of a theme there in this question from those miscellaneous quotes from four. This is actually from four different pages of your book. But the theme is, where are the warning signs? They were not strong in the case of Chris Watts.
No, that's the scariest part of the whole thing is that, you know, we're not always going, I think as human beings, we want to believe that we have control over what happens to us to a degree. We want to say that, oh, I would be able to spot a dangerous person. And, you know, in this case, like I say, there's no way, I don't think anyone who knew him could have ever suspected that this could have happened. However, you know, when I look back and some of the signs that I use in the book are not necessarily signs someone's going to kill you, but they're signs of sort of a pattern that something's not right. And so one of the major things that I found in hindsight was about, you know, 6 weeks before he killed his family, Chris started having an affair with a coworker, and he totally flipped the script on his wife. So she had thought everything was great in their marriage, and then she goes to North Carolina for the summer with her girls where the families were, and Chris was stayed behind in Colorado. And he sort of, you know, in that time, he goes completely cold on her, you know, cold as ice. And then a few weeks before he murders them, he says, I don't want the baby anymore. I would be okay if you had an abortion. And she's just totally shocked because he's the one who pushed for this third child. And
let me just stop you. Let me stop you for a second. They had two daughters so far, mm-hmm. and now she found out through, you know, the reveal or whatever that it was a boy. It was going to be a boy. So this is something that theoretically, or before, he would have been very happy about. But for at this point in his relationship, he was very cold. But go on.
Yeah, and he really wanted a boy, and you know. When you have a family and you have, and I'm a parent, so I'm speaking as a parent with children mm-hmm. very similar ages to Shanann's. When you have a family, you know, that when you bring children into the world, that's your responsibility. They didn't ask to be here, you know, and
right.
So you put them first. And he was willing to just throw away, you know, he had a son on the way and two little girls, and he wasn't willing to even go to counseling or to try to work things out. So he was only thinking of himself. And so, you know, I said to people reading the book, if you are with somebody for 8 years, like they were, and all this, and you're pregnant or your wife is pregnant or whatever, and all of a sudden they want nothing to do with you anymore, just like that, that's a huge red flag that something
yeah.
is going on. Now, again, it doesn't mean they're going to kill you,
right.
but that's a character flaw. That's not okay.
Yeah, and I think in a very, you know, just to put this in moral terms too, if, you know, he blew it by allowing himself to be so led away into temptation. So he just focused on this new relationship with this mistress and thinking, oh, I'll just get rid of my wife and my, you know, two kids, and then I get to start a new life with her. Yeah, right? Yeah, I mean, he never even was with her. He was never even with her, was he, after he murdered the whole family because the police were investigating and, you know, eventually he got caught. But we're basically out of time. Any last thoughts in 10 seconds?
No, that's just extreme narcissism for you. Everything you just described is selfishly putting yourself and your needs to the point where you would kill other people to get what you want, including your own children. So I think that's, you know, that was the takeaway from my book, is that was my final conclusion, was in order to do that, you have to be an extremely narcissistic person.
The book is called My Daddy is a Hero. You can get more information at LenaDerHalley.com. Lena, L-E-N-A, Der, D-E-R-H-A-L-L-Y. Thank you so much, Lena. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.